Chapter 22. 1719 Hours. The screams came from Porter's 6 o'clock, more than one of them. They were high-pitched squeals, like voices that hadn't broken. He spun around and looked beyond the Land Cruiser, towards the tree line on the opposite side of the track, 8 meters away. Half a dozen child soldiers were charging forward from behind the trees, their puny biceps straining under the weight of the AK-47 assault rifles they were pointing at the four men in front of them. They quickly fanned out across the track, shouting and jeering. The kids were the strangest sight Porter had ever seen. The child opposite him wore a white princess dress and a pair of dirty Nike trainers. His lips were smeared with red lipstick, and he'd applied some kind of white paint to his face in long, jagged lines. His index finger twitched nervously on the AK-47 trigger. He looked wired, mad, ready to kill. There was no time to displace. No time for Porter and Tully to reach for the Makarovs they were packing. No time to do anything at all. At a distance of 8 meters, even the worst shooter in the world could hit a human target without much difficulty. Porter stood very still, feeling his guts tighten into a tense knot. Lipstick stood in front of him, scowling.
"Where the fuck did this lot come from?"
Bald said.
"No idea, mate,"
Porter said, remembering what Tully had said earlier. "This is the West Side Boys' neck of the woods.
Oh, now we're really in the shit."
A seventh figure emerged from behind the tree line. He was a foot taller than the child soldiers, and he sported bum-fluff growth on the lower half of his face. Probably in his early 20s, thought Porter. Practically a pensioner by the standards of Sierra Leone. His dress sense was as weird as the other kids. He wore a threadbare Calvin Klein t-shirt and brightly coloured trousers with a pair of flip-flops. Glass shards dangled from his hair. He had a necklace knitted out of what looked like pubic hair. The world's largest ganja joint dangled from his lips. Porter guessed that this guy was one of the West Side Boys' senior commanders, or one of their recruiters. The guy had a hungry look in his eyes. He looked like he'd been living in the jungle for a long time, months, or maybe even years. In his right hand, he gripped an M1911 semi-automatic, a hefty pistol, chambered for the 45 ACP round, a true American classic, like the Ford Mustang or Morbid Obesity. But not well-maintained, apparently. The sliding mechanism was covered in rust, Porter noted. The older guy crossed the track and stomped over to the four men, the child soldiers flanking him on either side. He drew up in front of Porter, looked him up and down. His breath reeked of booze and weed. The guy thrust his M1911 at Porter and started jabbering at him in the local Creole language. He saw the blank expression on Porter's face and tried again.
"You kill my boys, white man. You think you kill them boys and get away with it?"
The guy had a slow, drugged accent. He sounded like the man from Del Monte loaded up on amphetamines. Porter said nothing.
"You know who you fucking with?"
Porter still said nothing. The guy stepped closer, thumped a fist against his chest.
"Me, Captain Big Trouble. This my country. These my boys."
He snarled, waving an arm at the dead kids littering the track.
"You fuck with me. Kill my boys. Now, me gonna fuck with you. Me gonna waste all you white crackers."
"Fuck off," said Bald.
The captain turned to Bald and flashed a manic grin. Half of his teeth were gold. The rest were missing. Then he shouted an order. One of the kids stepped forward, dropped his shoulder, and thrust the butt of his rifle into Bald's midriff. Bald gasped in pain as he folded at the waist, clutching his guts. Porter lunged at the captain, but two other kids instantly set upon him, striking out with their rifle butts. A third kid giggled as he clubbed Porter round the side of the head. Porter felt a searing pain explode between his temples, dragging its fingernails down the inside of his skull. He stumbled and fell forward, landing on the baking hot earth. Blood trickled down the side of his face, sticky and warm.
"Enough!"
Captain Big Trouble barked. The child soldiers stopped landing blows. They withdrew a few paces and stood in line next to their mates, keeping their rifles trained on the four men. Porter spat out blood and scraped himself off the ground. Big Trouble was staring at Soames, he noticed. Something like recognition flashed behind his eyes. He took a long toke on his joint, peered at Soames through the green haze of ganja smoke. Then he took a step forward.
I know this face.
Soames blinked in ignorance. Big Trouble jumped up in excitement and snapped his fingers like he'd remembered the answer to a quiz show question.
You, the Diamond Man! I seen your face on the TV. You're the friend of that man called himself the President. That's you!
Soames's expression tightened.
Let us go, he said, his voice trembling. I can make it worth your while. Just name your price. Whatever you want, it's yours. Diamonds, women, guns. You have my word. Just let us walk away.
Big Trouble laughed. There was a wicked gleam in his eyes.
Me got better idea. We gonna take you back to the village. Kill your friends. Then me kill you.
The color drained from Soames's face.
No, please, I'll give you whatever you want. Shut up!
Big Trouble roared. His eyeballs were inked with hatred.
Me gonna make you pay for all the bad things you did to our people. Me gonna make you hurt.
He shouted an order at the kids in Creole. Two of the child soldiers marched over to Soames and dragged him away from the others, prodding him along with their weapons. Soames looked towards the captain, shaking his head hysterically.
Christ! No, please, don't do this! Please!
Big Trouble ignored his pleas. He took a final pull on his joint, then flicked the butt into the ditch. Then he turned to the four other kids, pointed his weapon at Bald and Porter and Tully.
Kill them,
he said. The four kids simultaneously raised their rifles. The kid aiming at Porter didn't look old enough to shave. His lips quivered with excitement as he curled his finger around the trigger mechanism. Porter stared down the black mouth of the rifle muzzle. His asshole instinctively clenched with fear.
It's over, he thought. We failed. Now we're fucked.
The warrior inside him bristled with rage at the indignity of his death.
Slotted in this squalid little corner of the world by some kid young enough to be my own son.
He closed his eyes, said a silent farewell to his daughter.
I'm sorry, love. I'm so sorry for fucking everything up.
Then he heard two booming cracks. Porter opened his eyes after the first crack whipped through the air. Saw Big Trouble's head snapping back, his eyes rolling up into the roof of his skull. The kid's arms slackened, blood squirted out of a hole in the side of his head like red paint out of a graffiti spray can. The second bullet struck another one of the kids in the throat, sending him into a tailspin. The kid did a kind of spasmodic pirouette before crashing to the dirt. The AK-47 slipped from his grip, clattering to the dry earth beside him. Porter looked towards the direction the gunshots were coming from, towards the Range Rover, 80 meters downstream from their position. A dark green Land Rover Discovery had pulled up a few meters behind the Range Rover. The front passenger door hung open, and a hulking figure stood a few meters ahead of the wagon, his massive head tilted as he aimed down the barrel of an AK-47 at the kids. The weapon looked ridiculously small in the man's giant grip, like a wrestler brandishing a toy gun. Porter recognized the guy from his huge frame. The Man Mountain. Solomon. The five other kids turned to face the new threat from the south, but they were slow to react. They were still processing the trauma of seeing their commander die in front of their eyes. Only one of the kids remembered his training and aimed his weapon at Solomon. The Man Mountain fired again. The AK-47 snout flashed. The bullet struck the child in the face, smashing open his jaw and shattering his teeth. Solomon dropped the kid next to him before he could get off a shot, shooting him in the throat and tearing a hole big enough to slide a crowbar through. The child made a hissing noise and fell over backwards, landing next to the kid with a missing jaw. Panic set in amongst the three remaining child soldiers. Two of them turned and bolted down the track, away from Solomon. Tully and Bald lunged after the kids, tackling them to the ground before they could escape. The third child spun away from Porter and raced towards the tree line to the right of the track. Porter dived at the kid and sent him tumbling to the dirt, knocking the AK-47 out of his grip. The kid groaned as he landed on his back, the force of the impact driving the air from his lungs. He struggled wildly as Porter pressed his weight down. Porter gave the kid a few slaps. The fight quickly drained out of him, replaced by an animal-like terror. He screamed hysterically, kicking out and crying for his mother. Porter slapped him again. The kid stopped fighting. Porter slid off and scooped up the rifle, aiming it at a point between the kid's eyes. The kid froze. Porter turned his attention to Bald and Tully. Bald had disarmed one of the child soldiers and was hauling the kid to his feet. Tully was on top of the third kid, smashing his face in with the kid's AK-47. Each blow landed with a sickening wet crunch as Tully slammed the rifle stock into the bridge of his nose. Porter rushed over to Tully and grabbed him by the shoulders, pulling him away. Tully managed to land another blow before Porter dragged him clear. The guy stood over the battered child, his chest muscles heaving up and down, the rifle's wooden stock glistening with blood and stringy bits of tissue. The child lay on his back, motionless. His face was an unrecognizable mush. Porter looked up at Tully, stunned.
"Jesus, Bob!"
Tully shot Porter a hostile look. Drops of the child's blood glistened on his face.
"Piss off. You don't understand what it's like here. These kids don't watch Power Rangers and play PlayStation. They're stone-cold killers. There's no point trying to reason with them. Their lives are worth fuck all."
"They're just kids, mate."
"No."
Tully shook his head vigorously.
"That's where you're wrong. This lot of scum. Plain and fucking simple. What do you suggest we do with them? Let them go so they can go back to their camps and butcher a few more villagers? We're doing the locals a favour, killing these animals."
Porter stared at Tully. It's one thing to take down a child soldier threatening to pull the trigger on you, he thought. But it took a special kind of cold-bloodedness to beat a child to death with your bare hands. He heard the slam of a car door at his 3 o'clock. Porter looked over his shoulder and saw Dominique Tannen hurrying over from the Discovery, several paces behind Solomon. The Man Mountain breezed past the rest of the group and made a beeline straight for Bald.
"Sir, are you okay?"
he said. Bald stared at the guy in puzzlement. Solomon just stood there in obedient silence, waiting for a reply.
Yeah, mate. Never felt better."
"Never mind him," Soames barked. "I'm the one you should be concerned with. I'm the one who got kidnapped by the Russians and almost died in a bloody firefight, for Christ's sake."
Porter ignored him and looked towards Tannen.
"How did you know where to find us?"
"We've been tailing you since you left the hotel," she explained. "You told me you were going to Kono, remember?"
She shrugged.
"I figured you could use a little extra help."
"We didn't see you behind us."
"We left a few minutes after you. It's taken us this long to catch up. Frankly, I was beginning to worry that Solomon had us lost."
The Man Mountain smiled.
"Miss Tannen found me after you left. She said you needed someone to follow you into the jungle. I told her I know the secret way. You aren't the only one who knows the shortcuts to Kono."
"You should have stayed at the hotel," Porter said.
"I'm invested in this thing just as much as you. Besides," she added, scanning the bullet-riddled land cruiser and the corpses, "it looks like we got here just in time."
"Bloody good job, too," Soames piped up. "At least someone round here knows which side their bread is buttered."
He cleared his throat and flashed a thin smile at Tannen.
"I'll be sure to put in a good word with your bosses once this is over. Pull a few strings. See if we can get you a cozier posting in some more pleasant country."
Tannen ignored him. She surveyed the ground again and frowned.
"What happened here?"
"What does it look like?" Soames snapped. "We ran into an ambush. The West Side boys attacked us. One of the Russians was killed, but the other two got away. Then these three showed up."
He gestured to Porter, Bald and Tully.
"The child soldiers were going to kill them and take me away."
Porter snorted with contempt.
"Why would the West Side boys kidnap you?"
Isn't it obvious? I'm something of a celebrity in this country. Everyone knows my face. That makes me a high-value target. No doubt the West Side boys thought they could negotiate a large ransom for my return.
Good job you brought this brick shithouse along for the ride, Bald nodded at Solomon. If you'd left it any later, we'd have been toast. Those kids had us by the fucking balls.
Solomon insisted on coming, actually, said Tannen.
Yeah?
Said Bald, cocking his brow. Solomon bowed his head.
You saved my life at the hotel, sir. That means I am in your debt. When Miss Tannen said she was going to follow you, I was obliged to go along with her.
Bald glanced over at Captain Big Trouble. Blood pumped steadily out of the hole in the side of the boy's head.
Consider your debt settled.
I cannot. It does not work that way, sir. I must wait for a sign. Until then, I remain in your service.
Bald stared at the man mountain, wearing a face as if someone had just given him a turd for Christmas. Soames cleared his throat.
This is all well and good, but we must leave now. Every minute we piss about here gives the Russians more of a head start.
Tannen shot a quizzical look at Porter.
What's going on?
That hardly concerns you, my dear, Soames replied coldly.
Tannen said, We're the ones who risked our lives to follow you into the jungle. We're the ones who saved you from the West Side boys. I already know about the diamond stash, so you might as well tell me the rest of it. Soames clamped his lips shut and fumed for a beat. Then he nodded tersely.
Very well. The two Russians who escaped are on their way to Kono now. They're planning to seize the mine at Kono and rob me while they wait for reinforcements to show up. If they succeed in capturing the mine, they will control the diamonds. President Fofana's hopes of regaining power will go up in smoke, and any influence we currently have in this part of the world will be lost. It will be nothing short of a disaster.
Don't you have anyone guarding the mine? Soames shook his head.
I evacuated my men after the rebels launched their coup. Most of the workforce had left by then anyway. They fled at the first sign of unrest. There's nobody left.
Tannen said, What's the plan? Porter said,
We head to Kono and stop the Russians.
But won't they get to the mine first? Tully clicked his tongue and nodded down the track.
The road splits in two, about 20 miles to the east. The highway goes south past Yoni Banna, around the edge of the Kangari Hills. But there's a dirt road that goes north of the hills. It's not signposted anywhere, but that route will give us some time.
How much?
Porter said.
Tully squinted at the road ahead. 10 minutes, maybe 15. The Russians will hit the mine before we do, definitely, but until their reinforcements show up, it'll be just the two of them. It'll take a couple of hours for their mates to come up from Liberia. If we take the dirt road, we can still stop them and secure the place before the Russians' mates arrive.
Well, that's what we'll do then.
Porter turned back to Tannen.
Me, Jock, and Bob will ride up front with Soames. You and Solomon follow us. Keep a safe distance behind.
Tannen said, What if we run into another ambush?
It's a possibility, Porter conceded. We're going in blind, so we don't know what's out there. But if we get hit again, don't join the fight. You stop the wagon, turn around, and floor it back to Freetown. Got it?
Can't we call in for help? Warn Hawkridge and Angela that the Russians are en route to the mine? We might be able to divert some local resources to stop them.
Porter shook his head. The sat phone's dead. It's just us.
Shit.
What about these two?
Said Bald. He gestured to the pair of child soldiers. They stood huddled at the edge of the track, a look of raw fear in their eyes. Deprived of their rifles and captain, the kids suddenly looked a lot younger.
They're probably only a few years older than my Sandy, Porter thought. Except she's busy making friends at school, while this lot are chopping up foreigners.
It hurt his head to think about it. He approached one of the kids, grabbed him by the wrist, and dragged him forward. The kid struggled.
Please,
he said.
No, please.
Salty tears traced down the kid's cheeks. His lips trembled. Blood and snot bubbled under his nose. He stopped bleeding. So did the second kid. They both had the same look of silent terror. The look of someone preparing to die.
Please?
You got family somewhere, Porter said.
Aunt, the kid sniffed, in my village.
Fuck off back to your village then, you and your mate.
The kid blinked at Porter. Then he turned to his mate and said a few words in Creole. The pair of them took off across the track, scrambling past the ditch before they disappeared into the canopied gloom of the jungle. Tully shook his head in disbelief.
You're actually letting these animals go?
Porter confronted Tully with an angry stare.
Just because this is Africa doesn't mean we can get away with anything we want. We start killing unarmed kids, we could end up in jail, especially if the government turns on us. I don't know about you, but I'm not planning on dying in some hellhole African prison.
Tully shook his head again.
This was a mistake. You think those kids will honestly go back to their homes?
He threw up his arms and pointed down the road.
You saw them villages. Those kids don't have a fucking home to go back to. They'll go running straight to the nearest enemy camp.
I'm afraid Bob is right, Soames said. These children are beyond help, sadly. They're like wild dogs. The best thing for all concerned would have been to put them out of their misery. I expected better from you, Porter. For all your many faults, I never figured you were soft. You used to be a real man.
Porter rounded on Soames.
Get in the fucking wagon, now!
Soames stared defiantly at Porter for a moment. Then he turned and trudged down the track towards the Range Rover, nonchalantly stepping around the bodies of the slotted children. Tannen followed him, beating a path back to the Discovery. Porter and Bald each grabbed an AK-47 from the slotted child soldiers to supplement their pistols. Solomon collected up the spare clips from the dead. With the ammo they had foraged from the Westside boys, they had a total of 4 30-round clips of 7.62 by 39mm brass apiece. The rifles were in crap nick and the mags were held together with duct tape, but they were better than fuck all, thought Porter. He looked back down the track. Tully was scooping up the M1911 semi-automatic from beside the dead body of the slaughtered captain. Bald pulled a face.
You're not taking a rifle, Bob?
Tully laughed.
You dopey cunt. This is a collector's item. You don't see many 1911s on the market anymore. It'll fetch me a good price on the black market. Them 45 rounds pack a meaty punch too, he grinned broadly. Better than those shoddy pieces of crap you and Porter have got your hands on.
Bald stared enviously at the M1911. Then Tully smiled to himself and beat a path back to the Range Rover. Solomon hurried along behind him, cradling the spare mag clips for the assault rifles. For a moment, Porter stood still, waiting until Tully and Solomon were out of earshot. Then he turned to Bald and lowered his voice.
What do you reckon about that stuff Soames was saying? About the Westside boys wanting to kidnap him?
What about it? Bald said. Do you believe him?
I guess. Everyone knows the Westside boys are in the kidnap-for-ransom business these days. I reckon the President's right-hand man would be near the top of their most wanted list.
Porter looked away. He thought about the look on Big Trouble's face when he'd confronted Soames. Me gonna make you pay, the captain had said, for all the bad things you did to our people.
Pay for what?